AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Congratulations to our friends at Lowry Hill Meats, the eatlocalminnesota.com restaurant of the week. They won Best Deli in City Page's Best Of competition. I won, of course, there last year. Not in the deli competition, although I would. Oh, man, I would have a great deli like Lowry Hill Meats if I ever had one, because it's a solid, top-notch deli. Great sandwiches. If you have never been over there for the sandwiches, try them out for lunch. They're fantastic. And then, of course, get a little bit of their great product there to take home for dinner that night. 1934 Hennepin Avenue in Minneapolis. Lowry Hill Meats, the best deli in town, according to City Pages, and the eatlocalminnesota.com restaurant of the week. Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert. You can find his books, including The Floppy Show, his latest book, over at Common Good Books in St. Paul and totallyiowa.com. iowawatch.org is the exceptional public service show out of Iowa that he is a part of. And, of course, joining us from KXEL, Cedar Falls, Waterloo, where you guys are actually getting the snow today that is just managing to miss us after the near a foot and a half we got in Minneapolis, St. Paul. You're finally getting your last snowstorm of the year. I imagine you're just tickled pink about the snow.
There is nothing like thunder sleet on the morning commute to just make me feel good all over.
It will melt soon. I'm sure of it. I'm positive. The earth.
I just heard that. My boss said to everybody, look, it'll be 50 in a day or so. It'll be fine. That does not help me when the highway is a skating rink today, but I appreciate the optimism.
Well, in Iowa, they don't know how to plow to save themselves, and they might as well just send a Zamboni out there to shine it up.
Oh, no. Do we want to get into this?
No. When I was in Hardin County, the guys would plow the road by leaving the blade like 2 inches off the road. I'm like, what are you doing? Evening it out? Stop that. It was horrible.
They're just grooming and leveling, okay?
You're gonna diggins on the cross country course out there, for goodness sakes. All right, I want to start off with something that I'm gonna take you a little bit to task. I heard one of your Iowa politics reports, which we will post your latest version today. And
there we go.
And you were doing you did one where you were talking about that everything is not as doom and gloom with Trump. That there have been quote unquote some successes. And although I disagreed with your successes, China basically said they'd open up their market to all products and get rid of all tariffs, which would actually be a horrible thing for the United States, especially considering Argentina and Brazil want to move their product in there, especially the ag products in there. I mean, it might get a few cars in there, but overall it'd be a nightmare for the United States if China got rid of most of their tariffs. But one of the other things you brought up is that there definitely does seem to be movement on the Korean Peninsula towards a final peace process. There still is a declaration of war between North and South Korea. But whether Trump does not seem to me, from all the analysis I've seen on this, Trump doesn't seem to have been the catalyst. I mean, in a progressive way, it was more of an aggressive way, that his craziness led North Korea to basically said, wow, he really does seem nuts. They approached him. Obviously, the Olympics helped out. The North Koreans and South Koreans started talking. China got involved. And it was after that point that Trump sort of said, well, we're going to meet and we're going to be part of this. They were well down the road of the beginnings of the negotiation of a possible denuclearized North Korea, a possible reunified Korean Peninsula, which would be tremendous. But at the same time, it's just there seems to be this element where Trump is been playing, you know, coming in from behind. And obviously the United States is going to be included in some sort of program. But I mean, really, I mean, when you look at it, North Korea, if they do end up coming to the denuclearized table, if they do unify with the South Koreans, if there is a declaration of peace finally here on the Korean Peninsula, do you really think that Trump was the main reason for that, or it was just mainly the fact that Trump scared the North Koreans because of his recklessness to where they said, you know what, maybe we need to actually start talking to the South Koreans? Because to my knowledge, the United States hasn't been part of any of those negotiations.
Yeah, a couple of things on it. I mean, the first thing is, if you think back during the first year of the Trump presidency, he was taking all sorts of credit for various economic news that was good. Well, the reality is the world did not reset on January 20th of 2017.
Yes.
So every time a new person takes over, if it's bad news, they blame the last person. And if it's good news, they say it's because of them. So, you know, you've got the delay factor. OK, so you can't just measure it And this is to your point. You can't just say that the moment the man took office, then everything changed. Now, I think the point that I was making, if not that day on a previous day, is there were folks who responded to George W. Bush because they thought that guy's crazy and he's got his finger on the button, you know, the cowboy thing. And I think there's a fair amount of that with Trump where they think, oh my gosh, you know, if he's going to draw a line in the sand, he might not wait for somebody to cross it. And so it's a very different style than the previous 8 years. I'm not saying that it's the kind of thing that lets you keep your head together because it wants to explode. But the fact of the matter is that to the one point that you made, are they scared about what he might do? And I think the answer is yes. Now, does that get us to a better end? Okay, that's good, but talk about making lemonade at that point, right?
Well, and it's a very different kind of FDR World War II sort of thing. Obviously, we were attacked on Pearl Harbor, but I mean, this tough guy stance is, he's name calling, he's insulting. And let's just go back to the Olympics. Mike Pence was an absolute jackass to the North Korean delegation as they are there at their Olympics. I mean, that was part of the whole deal there. And so clearly, even at the Olympics, there was no, you know, accolades or advances from the United States to try to solve this problem outside of just spite. And it was well before that, a few months before that, that sounds like the initial stages of this potential peace began to take steps.
Well, now, the thing with Pence, from what I was told by people in Washington, the snubbing, very public snubbing we saw, supposedly was after a meeting had been abruptly canceled. Now, I'm not saying that you should act in a boorish manner with bad manners in retaliation, but my understanding is that it was very frosty in public because something that had been agreed upon had been canceled. But going to the broader point, the South Korean Olympics and then the North Koreans being involved, that alone, right, should have been a sign of, okay, there's something going on.
Yes.
And obviously there were many things behind the scenes, and that's my point about the meeting being canceled. Why did everybody in the U.S. delegation act the way they did? Well, apparently there was something that we don't or didn't know about at the time that precipitated it. There is no way that North Korea comes to any table without a way to save face, without extreme pressure from China, without all of these things. And another thing that I think we've talked about, if not, I know I've talked about it in the blog. If you think back, and this is not all the same North Korean leader, but historically, the North Korean leader wants to be thought of as a player on the world stage in front of his people. When Bill Clinton went to expedite the release of the journalists who were being held, the whole point was so that the North Korean leader could say, look, an ex-American president came here. I am respected in the world. When you get that kind of face-saving, then they can release people who are being held prisoner. Then they can talk about denuclearization if they get that kind of face-saving there in addition to the pressure from China. So it's coming from a variety of ways. It did not just start January 20, 2017, but I do agree with your assertion that they might be a little more concerned, scared, because of the unpredictability of what's going on in Washington.
Well, and clearly, I mean, I think even Kim Jong-un basically sort of said that, you know, I don't want a war to start because he's trying to take the headlines off the bad headlines he's getting at home off the page. And that's that just should tell you. I mean, when Kim Jong-un is also the rational guy in the room, it should tell you a lot about Trump. But this brings us forward to some things in the last few days. The reason I'm bringing this up, you got a report that Pompeo, of course, CIA director, who's now being pushed up for Secretary of State, Trump has said that he met with Kim Jong-un over the Easter break. Now, I think it was the Washington Post reported this. Other people have backed this up. There's that. But on the same time, you know, Trump has said, he just said recently that top American officials have met with Kim Jong-un, to which almost immediately afterwards, he started walking that back saying, oh, well, we haven't met with Kim Jong-un. We've met with some other leaders from North Korea. And I don't quite know what's going on here. One theory is the Pompeo thing is the, you know, it doesn't seem like he's going to get approved as Secretary of State. So this might be an attempt by Trump to put him into a position where he looks more Secretary of State-ish. But, you know, the whole thing about, well, we've met with Kim Jong-un. No, we've not really met with him. We've met with some senior officials. Where do you think things are right now? Because there seems to be a tremendous amount of confusion, even from Trump himself, of where they're exactly at with North Korea.
Tillerson had a different view as to how to deal with the North Koreans than Pompeo does. And so that was why that change was made. We knew that, right? We didn't know the depths of it. And in one respect, it's a bit presumptive to send the Secretary of State designate to have a meeting, whether it was with the North Korean leader himself or not. But since he has the current title as the CIA director, okay, I guess there's, you know, you can justify it, right? Because he's still an official. It does look a little heavy-handed. There's a lot of inconsistency. This just in, there's a lot of inconsistency that comes out of 1600 Pennsylvania. Look what happened with Nikki Haley over the weekend.
Oh.
They put her out on the Sunday shows, and she talked about possible additional sanctions against Russia because of the Syria situation. Then you get the White House trying to back off on that and throwing her under the bus, saying, well, she must have been, the ambassador must have been confused. Which led to her tremendous retort of, with all due respect, I don't get confused. I thought, done. That is perfect. She won't be there now, you know, past the end of the week probably. As a result. But what, I mean, somebody has to call that, okay? And I don't even have a problem with inconsistency. Just own it. But when you send your UN ambassador out to float a trial balloon and it thuds, and your response is to say, oh, she must have been confused. She's fine. She is not confused. And for her to say that, I thought was an interesting look inside Trump world. Now, the president likes it when people stand up to him in terms of the give and take, but only so far.
Well, you know, Stormy spanked him with a magazine. So but you do have a case where allegedly.
Thank you. Allegedly. That saved all of it by saying allegedly.
Kudlow's, the National Economic Advisor, his comments about that, and he's apparently, you know, come out and profusely said, oh, I've apologized. I was wrong in saying that. I shouldn't have done that. Although I am with you in agreement that Nikki Haley, if she's there, either she resigns or she's going to get canned in the next few weeks. I would not be surprised by that at all. You put on top of that Bolton coming on in. Bolton is a warmonger. He wants to fight wars. I mean, that's what he feels it's good for the economy. He feels it's good for American power in the world. That is just and he's basically purging all the national security advisors that don't agree with him out of the White House at this point. So that's what makes this whole thing with the North Koreans kind of interesting, because on one side of it, you've got clearly personnel who there's confusion on the international front. There is direct, definitive agendas, which are far more aggressive, that are coming into the White House. But yet there does seem to be this attempt by Trump to latch on to China and South Korea's attempts to bring North Korea into the modern age. And I don't quite, I mean, in his own contradictions within it, I mean, it's just a confusing mess at this point.
Sure, but the United States should be a part of that discussion. I don't think we want to be on the sidelines and just let it happen. And if we are working overtly or covertly to get to a resolution that works for the world and therefore for us, okay, that's all fine. But we should be a part of that. I don't know, and this is what is fascinating to me about it. As I recall the timeline, there were some threats made by the American president, and then all of a sudden, Kim shows up outside the borders of his country. What leader, what dictator, leaves that to chance while he was going to talk to some of these other folks? Now, is it him saying, holy cow, that guy's crazy, so therefore I got to start brokering some deals? Or are we playing the good cop, bad cop thing? I don't know, but it's fascinating that now all of this is happening. Now, again, I'm not saying that it is because of a plan hatched by the White House.
No.
But I do think your point about it is a reaction to it. I think there's something to that.
There is, and I agree with you on that, and I think there is a reactionary element to it. But I also would say, go back to this, the fact that the Trump administration has admitted they're not meeting with Kim Jong-un, which means Kim Jong-un is meeting with other countries. You're right. The United States needs to be involved, but it definitely feels as if we're involved in a tertiary manner at this point, not one of the major players at the table. And that's something which I think Trump wants to use that for shoring up local support. But the reality is we have to look at this that you know, at best, he scared the North Koreans because he seemed to be crazier than Kim Jong-un, which is a terrifying thing. We'll take a break. When we come back, Barbara Bush passes away. Plus, we got to talk Sean Hannity a little bit because that story gets a little more weird every single day. Jeff Stein joining us. Once again, iowawatch.org is the public service show he's part of down in Iowa. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us for his usual Wednesday visit. Jeff, the first lady under H.W. Bush passed away yesterday, Barbara Bush. The story came out, I believe it was late Monday, that she had decided to stop receiving medical treatment, which was a sign that the end was near. Obviously, a lot of accolades coming out in the last few days over Barbara Bush and her legacy as a first lady.
You know, there was one woman who was spouse to a president and mother of a president, and that was Abigail Adams until Barbara Bush. And one of the things that I think really was a testament to her legacy was the bipartisan level of outpouring that even if you did not agree politically, you understood the model she was trying to set, how difficult it is to hold that position. Remember, H.W. followed the Reagan years, and that meant Barbara Bush was succeeding Nancy Reagan, who had a very different role as first lady than her predecessor, Rosalynn Carter. And so Barbara Bush tried to carve out something a little different. I mean, it was a difficult act to follow, in other words. And to have the bipartisan nature of genuine respect for what she accomplished in terms of the political family that those on the right have looked at, right? I mean, it's not Camelot and the Kennedys per se, but it's the closest thing the folks on the right have. And so, again, to see that kind of treatment, I think pretty much tells us what we need to know.
Her work on literacy issues after her time in office has actually been quite exceptional and something that definitely needs to get tons of accolades because she has worked pretty much tirelessly to try to end illiteracy in the United States and around the world, and she's done a very good job of that. Well, let's move into Sean Hannity. As the story goes on, as we get more information, this is getting weirder. It's no longer just the shock of him, you know, and Michael Cohen admitting that he's his client. We now know Jay Sekulow, another of Trump's attorneys, was also representing him. His name shows up on legal briefings in support of Hannity. You have as well stories coming out from Vice and Axiom that basically state that Hannity is helping to craft some of these text messages, which I don't know if you really want to take credit for some of them. But he's helping to craft some of these text messages. He's one of a handful of people that whenever he calls the White House is immediately patched through to Trump no matter where he's at. One White House aide said he might as well have a desk here because he basically is part of the inner circle. On top of that, there was another story that came out a few months ago where someone set up a fake Sean Hannity account on Twitter. And Julian Assange from WikiLeaks thought it was the real Sean Hannity and was direct messaging him, implying of a long-term relationship between Assange and Hannity, as well as also saying, I've got more dirt for you sort of thing. Now, initially that was kind of looked at as kind of a quirk, but now when you throw that in with all the rest of this stuff and all the other connections, I'm starting to get the impression that Sean Hannity was no longer just a cheerleader for the president and Michael Cohen, that he actually was part of a larger plot going on here as far as dissemination of information.
Well, I think we've all suspected as much, given the vehemence with which he has directed these things. And he's a bandwagon guy. I mean, and he saw how things were going, and so he jumped on. Sekulow was on his program so much, the president wound up hiring him. I mean, truly, you know, as the president has open jobs, he's watching these shows. We know that. Yes. And Hannity simply is one of them. The way the whole thing came up was interesting because you've got Michael Cohen, the president's lawyer, saying, oh, you shouldn't listen to these tapes and shouldn't look at these documents that you seized when you were looking in my office. And now we find that it has to do with shady business dealings allegedly concerning the New York City taxi system. And getting appropriate licenses for people. So it's not just a payoff to an adult film performer. Okay, now we're talking about other stuff. Well, in order to say you can't look at the stuff, he was asserting attorney-client privilege, and they said, well, give us your client list. You don't appear to have clients. You're a lawyer, and you have an office, but who are your clients? He had three clients that he listed in calendar year 2016, 2017, whatever it was. Three. One was Donald Trump, okay? One was this Briody guy.
Yep.
And then the third mystery person who asked not to be named. And the judge said, no. I need a name. And that's when Hannity's name came out. But this is what doesn't make sense to me as a licensed attorney. Hannity says, I never dealt with him with a third-party manner. In other words, Cohen did not represent Hannity in litigation or negotiations with any individuals. Cohen never issued a statement for services. Hannity never paid for services. Where does an attorney-client relationship begin?
Yeah.
And that's a real problematic thing. For Hannity to say, well, I just called and asked him some questions. Okay. I don't know that if the assertion were turned around, I don't know that a court would buy it. Let's say Cohen started talking about Hannity. I don't think Hannity would be able to say there was an attorney-client relationship because there are certain benchmarks that you have to cross, and picking up the phone and calling somebody isn't one of them. By the way, not that many weeks ago, Hannity spent a weekend playing golf with Trump in Florida.
Yeah.
I at the time when that came out, that's like, that's a little squishy. Now, having said that, anybody in the media has people that they interview, they strike up personal relationships. Occasionally you go to somebody's wedding, they're, you know, whatever it is. But some of it gets too cozy without disclosure. And there's the key point.
Well, one of the things I mentioned is that if it was discovered that President Obama, he was never really investigated, there was no charges filed against him, nothing of that nature. If President Obama, it was discovered his lawyer had three clients and one of them was Rachel Maddow, there would be demands that Maddow shut down, that MSNBC be shut down, that, you know, the full investigation of what did he know and when did he know it sort of thing going on. The fact that this is getting pushed under the rug still is pretty shocking, considering the violation of journalistic integrity, let alone, as you sort of said, this mysterious. I mean, for God's sakes, watch some Law and Order if you need to understand what attorney-client privilege is, because what he's describing is not attorney-client privilege. But at the same time, Cohen did say he was a client, which would lead me to believe that probably Hannity is not being honest about the extent of their relationship because, you know, once you're in court, a judge is telling you, you have to tell the truth. Cohen is admitting that there's a client relationship there, but
he's asserting it. He's asserting it. And yeah. The other thing to note, though, and you just mentioned journalistic ethics, Hannity does not claim to be a journalist, but this is where he has it. He can't have it both ways. When Shepard Smith called him out, Shepard Smith is probably the token progressive on the Fox lineup, and he catches all sort of heat for that. But Shepard Smith in an interview kind of took a dig at Hannity. He said, look, we do news in the afternoon. What Hannity and those people do, that's just opinion. And Hannity tore into him and said, we break more news on my show, blah, blah, blah. Well, no, wait a minute. Are you a journalist? In which case you can't be having cozy relationships that we don't know about. Or are you an opinion ringleader of this circus? And you can't have it both ways. You cannot say that you have an attorney-client relationship or you don't. And it's interesting that the two don't know. Usually it's the client who thinks there's a relationship and the attorney who says, well, no, we didn't have that relationship. This is on its head, as are most things these days.
Well, and you know as well as I do, if he ever did get pulled into Mueller's investigation and they started asking about WikiLeaks, what's the first thing he's going to say? He's going to say, journalistic integrity, I don't share my sources. And so then he's going to fall back on, oh, I'm really a journalist. This is a game for some of these people, and it's a disgusting game because really there truly is something rotten at the core of this. I also want to give you credit on one thing, one last thing, and just mention this, is that as you said, politics, everything is local. Going back to Cohen, he's in trouble not because of the Stormy Daniels, which is this national story. He went to a local bank, said, I want to borrow $130,000 under these pretenses, and you cannot do it if you lie on the forms. That is against the law. And it's like the first thing I said, it was like, Stein's right again. Everything is local because if he gets in trouble because of this payment, it's because he lied to the bank.
And you're right. And then there's the additional stuff where he's pulling shenanigans in the New York City taxi industry. I mean, he's been under investigation for a long time, they say. But one last thing I'd mention. They're going after all the people in the circle around Trump. But can they get to Trump? Mm-hmm. In other words, with Cohen, okay, he may have been the fixer, like they like to say. But you have a fixer so it doesn't stick to the person at the center. And this is going to be the bedeviling thing for people because just because they get Cohen or Manafort or whomever doesn't automatically take you to the president. It just means that his inner circle was willing to take hits.
Well, who's the guy under Nixon said there's not enough swords to fall or not enough people to fall on the swords at this point? That's where we're going to get to. Jeff Stein, once again, find his books at Common Good Books and stpaultotallyiowa.com and look for the Iowa Politics Report. I'll post that up a little bit later on today. Jeff, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Have a great day now.
Take care. We got Mike Magany coming in next. Have a great day. We are back on a Thursday. Until then, see ya.